Delicate cups for tea were set at each place, although there was no servant in the room to pour. This meeting was held under the tightest security. The industrial might of Japan, Yamagata thought. Representatives of the nation's 5 major corporations. Their joint worth was in the trillions of yen. They ran the government. They ran Japan's major industries. And they ran Yamagata as well. Saito had no problem with the arrangement. It was all as it should be, he thought. I take the risks of this new enterprise in space. If it fails, it is my fault, not theirs. If it succeeds, they become wealthier and more powerful. If it succeeds, Japan becomes the energy source for the world, and the Middle East becomes a backwater once again. The would-be samurai, kneeling at the head of the table, was saying, "The American effort has met 2 severe setbacks this month. Their experimental rocket plane crashed during a test flight, and their hydrogen facility exploded, killing their chief engineer." "That would be 3 setbacks, then," murmured the oldest man at the table. "Your arithmetic is impeccable," said the samurai, dipping his head in agreement. The others laughed. The elder looked toward Yamagata at the foot of the table. "These regrettable accidents will drive your competitor from the field, I suppose." Yamagata took in a hissing breath before replying, "Perhaps not. The American is tenacious almost to the point of foolhardiness. I know him well." "He worked for you several years ago," said one of the others. "Yes, I came to like him. I still do. But he is a competitor." "True," said Yamagata, thinking, "a valuable competitor. Without Dan Randolph's mad drive to build an American PowerSat, these 5 old men would still be dithering over financing my corporation." "Can he be eliminated now?" Yamagata said, "He is in financial need. My information is that he has agreed to sell a small percentage of his company to Tricontinental Oil in order to raise the capital he needs to continue."
"Garrison?"
asked one of the men, clearly shocked at the news.
"Garrison,"
replied Yamagata in a near whisper. The samurai said, "If Tricontinental gains control of the American power satellite, they have the resources to push the project through to completion, and do it at least 3 years before our own satellite can begin operating."
"This is unwelcome, not acceptable," said the elder.
"The deal with Garrison has not been finalized," Yamagata told them, "although it is moving swiftly toward completion."
"Can it be stopped?
Is there something we can do to stop it?"
Yamagata waited, head bowed, until they ceased their chatter and all turned to him.
"I believe I have a solution," he said meekly.
No one spoke, waiting to hear what he had to say. Yamagata began to explain. "The American PowerSat is almost completed. What Randolph needs more than anything else is transportation to and from the satellite. That is why he was developing the rocket plane."
"But it crashed."
"Just so," Yamagata said. "That leaves Dan Randolph with the problem of getting people and material to his satellite in the most economical manner possible."
"He can use NASA shuttles, can't he?"
Suppressing a smile, Yamagata replied, "The American government does not interact well with private companies. They suspect that any organization which strives to make a profit is somehow crooked and must be dealt with at arm's length." A few chuckles and grins went around the table. "It would take Randolph many months, perhaps a year or more, before he could work out an agreement with NASA to rent space on their shuttles. That is, assuming that NASA would deal with him at all. In my estimation, NASA simply does not have the capacity to accomplish its own missions and add Randolph's workload as well."
"Then NASA is out."
"It would seem so," said Yamagata. "That means Randolph must go to one or more of the private launch companies in the United States or Russia."
"What about the European Space Agency?"
"Their launch capabilities are limited and fully booked," said Yamagata. "No, Randolph must go to a private company in the States or Russia." He hesitated a heartbeat, then added, "Or Japan."
"Ah," said the samurai, "I begin to understand."
Even the elder, normally sour and gruff, allowed himself a slight smile. I could propose a strategic partnership with Randolph. Yamagata Rockets will provide transportation to and from his satellite. The money he takes from Garrison can go into the development of his spaceplane. And what do we gain from this? Yamagata closed his eyes for a moment. At last he said, We gain a share of the spaceplane, perhaps a license to build it here in Japan. With such an advanced transportation system, we could shave perhaps a full year off the development of our own power satellite and reduce our costs significantly. But the American spaceplane is a failure. It crashed. It crashed, Yamagata agreed. Most new aircraft crash. Most new rockets blow up. But the spaceplane is basically sound and valuable. The five older men rocked back on their haunches. No one broke into applause or even hissed appreciatively, but Yamagata knew he had won the day. Matagorda Island, Texas. Following Tenney's trail wasn't as simple as Dan had hoped it would be. The engineer kept no notes, no record of his hunt for the traitor among Astro's staff. Dan ransacked Tenney's office, spent hours each night poring over his computer files, searched for keywords, clues, hints. He could find nothing. Dan even went to Tenney's home to ask his widow and teenage sons, as gently as possible, if he'd discuss the matter with them. Nothing. At last he tried a different tack. Late at night, alone in his own office, Dan called up the computer's personnel program and began to search for signs showing that Tenney had hit a particular individual's file. Now he began to discover too much material. Tenney had delved into dozens of files. Dan sorted the hits by date. Joe had evidently started with the technicians on the launch team, then the flight controllers, and branched out to all sorts of people. Even Niles Muhammad and Dan's executive assistant April were on Tenney's hit list. He scrolled through the personnel department's directory of all the company's employees. 864 men and women he saw. Then he corrected himself. No, make that 863. They haven't taken Joe's name off yet. 863 people. One of them's a traitor. Maybe more than one, but who is it? Which of them has sold me out? Which of them is a murderer? He knew a lot of the employees by first name, knew them well enough to listen to their family troubles, well enough to joke with them. April was always bringing in tidbits about romantic entanglements, who was chasing whom, who was breaking up, who was expecting a baby. Maybe she could help me track down the killer, Dan thought. Then he laughed at the idea. Shows how desperate I am, he told himself. April is terrific with the in-house gossip. A detective she ain't. He fell asleep at his desk, waking only when the morning sun lanced through the window that looked out onto the parking lot. Bleary-eyed, he stumbled along the catwalk from his office to his apartment. Half an hour later, showered, shaved, dressed in a freshly pressed shirt and slacks, he went back to his office. Can't beat the commute, he said to himself. I never have to worry about the morning rush traffic. A few people were already down on the hangar floor. He didn't see Passo among them. April was at her desk, brushing her silky dark hair. Dan gave her a smile that was almost a grimace. Why can't she do her hair before she comes into work? He grumbled to himself. Then he remembered that she drove a baby blue Dodge Sebring convertible that half the guys in the company drooled over. Cool car, but it made a mess of her hairdo.
Breakfast?
She asked as Dan went into his office. Just grapefruit juice, he said, then added, and coffee. Start the day with the two major food groups, vitamin C and caffeine. Dan sat at his desk and took a deep breath. Let's see if you can get through the day without going broke, he muttered. He saw that April had already booted up his computer and displayed his morning's appointments and incoming calls. The insurance carrier, of course, Passo. Somebody named Neil Heinrich. Somebody named Neil Heinrich of Tricontinental Oil. Somebody named Neil Heinrich of Tricontinental Oil. Somebody named Neil Heinrich of Tricontinental Oil. One of Garrison's One of Garrison's flunkies, most likely.